everyone. Welcome to Ask Dr. Karen. We're here every month on WWER 88.1 FM, and we're so glad you're joining us today. As always, I'm joined by the star of the show, Dr. Karen Self-Sullivan. Dr. Karen provides personalized training and behavior modification for dogs and their people in the greater Fredericksburg and Northern Neck areas of Virginia. She's provided private personalized service to dogs and their families across the area. And today is a very special day for Ask Dr. Karen. Tell us a little bit about it, please.
I always have gotten a lot of emails from students. When I was working with manatees and dolphins and I had all my information online, they would reach out and they'd want to do reports or ask me questions. Interview a scientist is a big thing in the school system. Mary reached out to me a couple weeks ago, and she's doing a paper on dogs. She's a seventh grader, and she has two dogs of her own, and she just had this whole slew of questions that she wanted to ask me. So I set up an interview with her this past week. I just did the interview over the phone, and hopefully she's going to send me a copy of her paper. But I thought the questions might be of interest to our listeners. And they're kind of short answer questions. It's not a lot of detail, and it's not all on one subject like we've done before. But I thought it might make a good podcast. So here we are.
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds great. First of all, I encourage anyone out there to send their questions in to Ask Dr. Karen, because she is going to address them. And I love the idea of a student doing that. I think that's great information. I think that we've talked before about how families, the entire family, should prepare for having a dog in their home and knowing the ins and outs of having, you know, dog ownership and taking care of them properly and training them properly. So I think that's really great. And I'm glad you're so approachable. And I encourage anyone out there that has questions to send them in. We'll have some information about that at the end of this episode. So let's go with the first question that Mary asked. What is the most difficult thing about training dogs and why?
Well, I have to laugh, because when I answered this directly to her, it kind of froze her. But the most difficult thing about training pet dogs is the owner. It's the human in the picture. Dogs, unless they have an emotional issue and they're afraid or anxious, dogs are really easy to train. But getting the owners to change the way they approach training can sometimes be difficult. For hundreds of years, there was this classic, old-fashioned training method of making your dog do something and punishing your dog if they didn't do it. And with the advancement of research into animal behavior on domestic dogs, we've changed all that. So if I can get the owners to buy in to my methods, training the dog's pretty easy.
That's great. That's awesome. Kindness always works, I guess, is the moral of that story. So was there ever a dog that was difficult for you to train, and why was it hard?
Yeah, I've had several dogs that I wasn't able to work with directly. And this is because the dogs were very anxious or very fearful of strangers. Now, if the owner hired me for a series of training, by the fifth or the sixth visit, I could actually work with the dog. But what we had to do in the meantime is I had to coach the owner through the training. Now, I used to do that in person, but these days I can do it via Zoom. So if you have a dog that's really anxious or fearful of strangers, sometimes the best way is to work with a professional trainer or behaviorist via Zoom, so that the dog doesn't get all upset and anxious as soon as that professional walks into your house.
Yeah, that's great. I had a friend one time that had a Yorkie that she took to a obedience class. And about halfway through, the trainer said, "That dog needs an obedience class." And she said, "Well, why do you think I'm here?" So she left and found a better dog trainer. But it does happen. I know it must be a challenge sometimes. So what is your most and least common breed to train? And why do you think this is?
I can't say that there's one most common. I mean, I have worked with pretty much every breed that's living in this part of Virginia. Everything from the little foo-foo dogs, the Shih Tzus. I've got one client right now. Cheerio is only 7 pounds. Tiny, tiny little dog. But he is reactive, you know. Anything strange and he gets a little bit anxious and starts barking. The biggest dog I've worked with would be one of the Anatolian sheepdogs. that was really an outdoor dog. He lived on a farm and he lived, you know, he had his space, his protected space inside the farm with the sheep and the other animals there on the farm. And that makes it a little bit more difficult to work with when the dogs don't actually live in the home with the humans, because they don't have a strong bond with the humans. They really have a strong bond with their flock. So probably, you know, labs, German shepherds, doodles. Doodles are very popular now. Labradoodles, Bernie doodles, all the doodles. But I have worked with dozens of different breeds and a lot of rescue dogs that are mutts. And sometimes the mutts are the easiest to train because they haven't been bred specifically for physical traits. It's just like whatever was the best, friendliest dog that came out seemed to be the one that got adopted.
Right, right. That's great. So do you have a breed that you like to train, that you prefer? What type of dog is it and why do you like that breed?
Absolutely, the Labrador Retriever. I love it because I'm a volunteer for Service Dogs of Virginia, and the service dog puppies that I get are almost always Labrador Retrievers. People think that there's a big difference in the lab. They'll say, is it a black lab or a yellow lab or a silver lab or is it an English lab? They're all the same breed. They're all Labrador Retrievers, and there's a lot of variation in the way they look. But for the most part, they were selected by breeders to be retrievers. So they worked with hunters, you know, retrieving fowl when they went out to shoot ducks or whatever it is mm-hmm. they were hunting. And for me, they seem to be the easiest breed that I work with.
That's great. I have a grand dog that is a chocolate lab. His name is Bama. He is the bestest boy in the whole wide world. He's great with my grandsons and he's such a good dog. So I completely understand that. That's great. Do you have a dog yourself that you like to train?
Yeah, I lost my companion dog last July to a canine cancer called hemangiosarcoma. And we lose a lot of dogs to that cancer. And there are organizations that are raising money for that. But since then, I have taken on a new puppy for Service Dogs of Virginia. And he's a black lab and he's growing crazy. I mean, he's growing so fast. He was, when I picked him up in December, he was 11 pounds and now he's 32 pounds. So they grow fast. They learn fast.
They sure do.
Yep. I think he's going to be a big boy.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I mean, I've had dogs all my life that I've worked with, and they were mostly either little dogs that I rescued or mixed breeds that had at least had part lab in it. I've had a couple of lab cattle dog mixes that are just super smart, super easy to train.
Yeah. So what's your favorite thing about training dogs?
The joy that the dog gets when you're working with a trainer or an owner that uses positive reinforcement, because that dog is so curious about what can I do to make my owner reward me, you know? And so, and when they're younger puppies, they just kind of throw themselves at you. They try everything they're physically able to do. And if you can capture it as a trainer, then you can get it repeated and then you can put it on cue and you can have a dog that can do 100 different behaviors, you know, learn 100 different behaviors over the first year of its life.
That's great. I read somewhere that dogs can understand words like up to the vocabulary of a 2-year-old.
So I don't think they're understanding English or Spanish or whatever it is that you speak. What they're doing is they are making the connection between a verbal cue, which we would call a word, and the behavior that it's associated with. You can combine those cues so it almost seems like a sentence. Like mm-hmm. you can have a cue for go to something or come away from something and match that with a noun like a mat or a ball. Some breeds seem to be better at remembering nouns than other dogs. Some of the cattle dogs can, I know there's one dog that had a vocabulary of about 1,000 different nouns, where you could send this dog to its toy room and he would bring back the right toy every time. That's
yeah. I just was curious about that. I had heard that and I wondered exactly what the definition of that was. That's very interesting. So has there ever been something that you wanted to teach to dogs, but you couldn't? And why couldn't you?
A lot of the different things I like to teach have to do with good manners. So I don't teach a lot of tricks, but I will say that for some dogs, depending on their size, I haven't been able to teach them to do certain things. So, for example, my dog, Wren, he was a big boy. So I couldn't teach him to tuck in under a chair because he was just too big.
Right.
Other dogs, like little dogs, if they're anxious and I want to teach them to meet and greet somebody in a new place, it's difficult because they're anxious and they either want to bark at that new person or they want to come hide behind my legs. So there are physical restraints and there are some emotional restraints to training.
That makes sense. Is it easier to train smaller dogs or bigger dogs and why?
I think it's easier to train bigger dogs. But again, I'm going to go back to the human in the training scenario. Little dogs that don't do what you want them to do, it's easy to pick them up and make them do it, right?
Right.
100-pound Labrador Retrievers or Rottweilers or Great Danes that are almost 200 pounds, you can't pick them up and make them do anything.
Right.
But they're all very anxious to please. So you have to figure out a way to get them to do what you want them to do with positive reinforcement.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Or easier.
Yeah. Are older dogs harder to train than younger dogs, and why?
Well, certainly puppies are the easiest to train. You start working with a puppy at 8 weeks, that next couple of months, they are just so anxious and curious and wanting to please you that they're really easy to train. Older dogs can easily be trained, but it takes a little bit longer. They don't offer as many behaviors like a puppy does. So you have to be patient and waiting for them to do something in the direction of the behavior that you're looking at so you can capture it or shape it. The only time it's a really serious problem is for very old dogs that maybe have developed canine cognition dysfunction. And you don't see this a lot, but if a dog lives well beyond its normal age range, sometimes their brain just won't be working as well. Just like older people have some cognitive dysfunction sometimes that's related to aging, dogs can have that same issue. And it's just really difficult to train a dog once they've lost their cognitive abilities.
Present company included on that, by the way. I completely relate to that. So why do you think some dogs are easier to train than others?
I think it has to do with their emotional stability. It's not a breed thing, because within any given breed, you'll see a whole range of confidence in the dogs. You'll see a whole range of anxiety or lack of anxiety in the dogs. So it's really that more emotional situation that makes some dogs more difficult to train.
Probably just like people, I guess, you know, we all have our levels of emotions. So how long does it take for most dogs to listen to you and learn?
Well, they listen pretty quickly because I use food to motivate them to listen. I don't free feed my dogs. You'll hear a lot of people say, oh, I just fill the bowl up and when it's gone, I fill it up again. But if the dog doesn't need you as a resource to feed it on a regular schedule, then it makes more difficult to build that relationship. I will tell you, for service dog puppies, which of course are trained at a very high level, we spend about 2 years. They're usually 2 years old before they are placed with their client or their person that needs them to help with a disability. The fastest training happens in that early puppy stage. So I can capture, like CJ has already got 24 behaviors that I'm working on, and he's not quite 4 months old. As you get older, what you're doing is taking those early trained behaviors and you're shaping them into more complex behaviors or using them in different situations. So the other thing is, I like to remind people, every interaction you have with your dog, either you're training your dog or your dog's training you. So training is a lifetime commitment. You don't ever stop training, but you don't train as intently as you do when they're puppies.
Right. So how does a clicker help teach the dog the discipline that you're working with them?
Yeah. So when I say I train using positive reinforcement, that means when the dog does something I like, I give the dog something it likes, or I allow the dog to do something he or she wants to do. So the clicker in that situation becomes a bridge between the behavior and the actual reward or the treat. The clicker is a unique sound in the environment. So for example, if I'm teaching a dog to sit, instead of using a treat to lure that dog into a sit, puppies especially, I just wait for the dog to sit. When he sits, I click, and then I give him a treat. So very quickly, he learns that the click means a treat's coming. Therefore, the clicker is a reinforcer. We have three different kinds of, three different levels of reinforcers. The primary reinforcer is what the dog really wants, usually food. The secondary reinforcer is one step removed from that. So in this case, the click is the secondary reinforcer. And the third tertiary reinforcer is the verbal or the visual cue. So a cue is an opportunity to get a click, which always leads to a treat.
That's great. So the click lets them know that they have accomplished what you wanted them to do.
Yeah, it means, yes, that's exactly what I wanted you to do. And it also means a treat's on its way. And it also means you're released now. You don't have to keep doing that thing once I click.
That's very interesting, very informative. What is a method that you use to teach that?
All of my methods are based in relationship training. So they're all about building strong, trusting relationships between the human and the dog. We call it the human-canine bond. So everything that I do is using positive reinforcement. The dog does something I like, I reinforce it. The dog does something I don't like, I simply ignore it. I don't use positive punishment in training at all. Now, in management, sometimes I've got to use a restraint of some sort. If the dog is running towards the street, I've got to pull him back on that leash, right?
Right, right.
I wouldn't use that in trying to train. I wouldn't jerk back on the leash. But if it's an emergency situation, he's running into the street or he's getting ready to jump up on somebody, then I would use that. And that would be considered positive punishment, but I'm not using it in training. I'm using it in management because I've had to be reactive in my management. I didn't plan well enough to be proactive and prevent it from happening in the first place.
Right, right. That's very good information too. Because it's like you said, it doesn't know better. You're teaching it and it's not fair to be so negative towards the dog until you've trained it what to do and not to do. So this is a big one. How do you handle aggression?
So aggression is usually coming from either the dog is afraid or anxious. I like to use the word uncomfortable. And we have what we call this ladder of aggression in dog behavior. At the bottom of the ladder, you might see something that maybe the dog will freeze, or the dog will stare at you, or the dog will back away from you, get a really stiff body. Those are those little things at the bottom of the ladder where you can tell if I keep pushing this dog, the dog's going to go up that ladder of aggression. He might growl, he might lunge, he might bite, he might nip. And the way I work with aggression is to try to identify that those precursors, those early signs that the dog is uncomfortable, help the dog work through that by giving him space or just, you know, backing away and saying, okay, you don't want to be this close. That's fine with me. I don't use aggression because the dog is showing aggressive behaviors because he's uncomfortable. If I add a punishment to that, then I'm adding stress to the situation, which is only going to make it worse.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what equipment do you use to train and why do you use it?
I use what we call humane equipment. I usually use a martingale collar and a leash.
Can you describe what that collar is? What type of collar that is?
A martingale collar is it's a nylon collar, or you can get it in leather too, but the nylon seems to work better. And it has an extra loop in the collar. So if the dog pulls away from you, that loop causes the collar to narrow down to a perfect fit, not a choking fit, but to a perfect fit. So the dog, we call it a collar cue. The dog can feel when that collar is coming down to that perfect fit. And that enables us to teach collar cues so that when the dog feels that, we train the dog to do something like back into it to release that tightness. A 6-foot leash, because I can drop it and step on it. If I'm training a recall, I might use a 20 or a 30 foot leash. So if I'm not in a fenced area, I can get that far away from the dog and still work on the recall. I use a harness a lot of times because the dog is so used to pulling that it's uncomfortable on their neck, even with a martingale collar. There's some things that I will not use, and I don't even sell them in my shop. I will not use a choke collar. I won't use an electric shock collar. I won't use an extendable or retractable lead because there are all kinds of accidents that can happen with that that can hurt you and your dog. I don't use any aversive sound. So some people will say they'll train their dog, they'll use an air horn or a can of pennies or something to add an aversive sound when the dog's not doing what you want them to do. I don't use any of those. I don't use spray bottles. You know, some people will use a spray bottle to make a dog stop doing something. None of those aversive tools do I use. So basically, I've got a humane collar and leash and harness system, and I'm using a clicker and treats.
Yeah, that sounds fair and sounds like a good opportunity for the dog without, you know, disturbing it or frightening it or whatever. So that sounds really good. I got to tell you, Mary had some very intuitive questions, and I wish her luck on her paper, but I feel like she's going to ace it because she's got a full complement of information to put in there. So thank you again, Mary, for submitting your questions. Now, we referred to CJ, you did, while you were talking. If you didn't listen last month, we know that Dr. Karen has CJ, a black lab pup that she is training as a service dog. And I know you mentioned like he was getting bigger and whatever. Where are you in his training? What types of things? You talked about the commands you're working on, because we talked last month about how there is a window of time when you get a puppy to do training. And we talked about, you know, getting them out and socializing them, but being very protective of them and making sure that they don't become ill. So where are you and CJ right now in your training? What types of things are you doing?
So the behaviors we're working on are sit, down, come, leave it, targeting, handling. So we call them husbandry skills. So where I can look in their ears and handle their feet and get them used to having their nails cut, being brushed. We're working on, there's one behavior we just started. It's called close, C-L-O-S. And that's where I teach, if I'm sitting in a chair in a restaurant, I want CJ to come in and turn around and back in between my legs and sit there so he can watch the world, but he's not out there where somebody's going to trip over him. Close, you can also build into go under a table, and we haven't gotten there yet. Targeting, we're doing the nose target to my hand so that I can use my hand as an invisible leash. Take it, leave it, I already said. Also drop it. The word I use to train drop it is trade, because that reminds me that if he's got something that I need to give him something in exchange for it. So I'll trade him a treat. Let's see. The other targeting we do is targeting with their paws. So I have a little red platform. It's just a little piece of wood covered with red felt. And we teach him to walk to that as a target and put his front paws on it. And so we'll use that to teach him how to station, how to be in a certain place that we can build into other behaviors later. We also use it to help teach polite leash walking. So we'll set up, when we're up at the training center in Charlottesville, we'll set up a series of those little red platforms, and the dogs will walk beside us to the next platform and stop when they put their feet on there, and then we'll go from one to the other.
That's great. Well, I just know some of us are interested, and it's interesting to follow along and see this progression. So we'll ask for a CJ update every month as we wrap up. And thanks again to Mary for her questions. And as always, thank you, Dr. Karen, for the wonderful guidance. And remember, you can submit your questions via text or voice message at 540-287-8207 or by using the contact form online, drkaryn.com. That's askdrcaryn.com. Be sure and tell your friends about Ask Dr. Karen, and we'll see you all next month. Bye.
Bye.